It's time for Steve Bucci.
All right, one of our all-time favorite guests here, Stephen Bucci. Been with us for a while, 30-plus years of military excellence, and we get a chance to chat with him each and every week here on Mondays to talk about what's going on around the world and get his expert advice and opinion on some of this stuff. And Stephen, good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, Lee. I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me back.
All right. 7 days have come and gone since we last spoke. Any thoughts that have changed dramatically since the last time? I mean, do we still think Putin is sort of on the fringe of lunacy, or do we think he's cagey like a crazy cat, or do we think he's marching across Ukraine and will stop there and go beyond? Any differences that you've had in the last 7 days?
No. I don't think he's crazy. I don't think he's being wise. Don't get me wrong. But, he's not, off his rocker. He's very calculating. He's made a decision that he thinks he can get away with this and is willing to pay whatever price he has to pay in blood or treasure to get it done, because I think he believes in the long term. Everything will come back into balance and he'll be fine. I don't think he's right. I think the price to the Russian people is going to be horrendous. And obviously the price to the Ukrainian people is going to be horrendous. He's trying to take away their country. And the latest insult, in the so-called talks where he agreed to a refugee corridor, but it has to go through Belarus.
Right.
Really? So you're going to say, oh, well, we'll let you out of the country, but you have to come into our territory that we control 100%, basically, so we can pick through what we want and see who we're going to let out and who we're not. I mean, the demands he's making are insanity. Even jumping over to the Iran nuclear deal, Russia says, oh, no, we're not going to let the deal go through unless there's a guarantee that if there's any restrictions put on anybody or restrictions put on us, it doesn't affect how we get to deal with Iran. So he's already, trying to play fast and loose and break up the West and get us to make some bad decisions that benefit him. And we've got to stand fast. We've got to stand together. We've got to hold the line and not let him get what he wants, because it's just going to lead to more of these situations going forward.
Now, you mentioned the Iranian nuclear talks, and I wanted to ask you about that, so we'll do it now. I heard rumblings and rumors. Are they negotiating this entire package themselves with us on the sidelines? That's kind of what I've heard. Or are they negotiating for us? How is that shaking out, Stephen?
We have representatives there. The Russians are sort of the host of the talks, and so they're sort of the MC, and which is a bad idea.
Right.
I mean, who thought that was a good idea? Even before they did this, it was a stupid idea. But to continue to do it now, to continue to put us at the behest of Putin, at the same time we're saying, oh, he's a bad guy and he's doing these terrible things, that's nutty. And then you have, John Kerry, bless his pointed little head, saying, well, I really hope this whole Ukrainian war thing doesn't interfere with climate change and the Iran deal, because those are really important. Yeah, well, I'm sure the Ukrainian people think they're just as important as all get out, John.
Right.
I mean, what a clueless, tone-deaf man. To have in charge of anything anywhere in the country representing America. But, that's kind of what we seem to be doing.
According to some Ukrainian news outlets, 66,224 men, this was as of Friday, have already returned to the Ukraine from abroad since the war has started, meaning they're ready to grab up arms and fight against the invaders. You shocked by that?
No, not at all. These folks, not just the Ukrainians, but lots of the countries over there in Central and Eastern Europe, there's a lot of them out there in the diaspora. There's a lot that have, over the last 25, 30 years, have left home and moved to other countries to start businesses, to start a new life in freer countries than what they were living in. But they still love their home country. That, you know, they're not Russians, you know. And for Putin to say, well, you know, it's all just Russia anyway, so we're just rescuing people that belong to us anyway. Ask the people. They don't think they're Russians. They think they're Ukrainians, and they have a very strong tie back home, to the point where you see them even willing to come and fight. And I don't think they're doing this. You know, this is not like 18-year-old idealists who think they're going to go there, you know, shake their fist at the Russians and they're going to run away. These are mostly working-age males, you know, from their mid-20s up to their 50s.
Right.
That, you know, have some life experience, that understand what it means to poke the Russian bear, and are willing to do it to defend their homeland. And you got to admire them.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Zelensky says that if the Ukraine falls, so will Europe. You agree with that?
You know, I don't know if the whole of Europe will fall. I think if Ukraine goes down the tubes, which means NATO will have failed to stand up to Russia sufficiently, it will put a serious, you know, not just a crack, but a gigantic crevice in NATO's credibility, which will greatly increase the likelihood that Putin will continue to do this in other places, several of which are now members of NATO.
Right.
But what you're sending as a message to Putin is, yeah, we're really not serious about standing up to you, so, you know, don't make us look too bad, but you could probably keep going. That's the way he's going to read it. So in the big scheme of things, Zelensky, you know, I don't think it means Russia's suddenly going to, you know, start driving tanks to the Atlantic Ocean. But they're going to keep chipping away piece by piece, at least at the near abroad, those countries that either used to be inside the Soviet Union or were aligned with the Soviet Union through the Warsaw Pact. He wants them back, or at least wants them completely neutered, so they're demilitarized, they're not part of NATO, and they have no connection to the West. I don't see how we can let him dictate to everybody that. I mean, Russia's not even that strong a country, for goodness sake.
Right.
It's not the Soviet Union anymore.
Well, it's got to be the saber rattling of a nuclear threat that keeps everybody at bay. There's really no other excuse for it. You're exactly right, as always. I mean, their military is not nearly what it once was, and you're noticing it now with half of their equipment falling apart or running out of gas. They don't, you know, there seems to be a disconnect from the top on down to how they're actually trying to actually make some of these orders and implement some of these orders. And to take ground, it just seems like it's much, much harder than we would have thought it was going to be, right? I mean, that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, absolutely. When they actually turned all those troops, all those tanks, all that self-propelled artillery, all those rocket launchers, actually turned it to a full-up invasion, I was thinking, yeah, we could, by the time NATO calls for the meeting, you know, Russia's going to be at the western border of Ukraine.
Right.
And I was wrong. The Russians are not 10 feet tall. They're not 10 feet tall with their conventional military. They're not 10 feet tall with their cyber capabilities. The Ukrainian people, with nothing but, you know, small arms and a lot of chutzpah, are standing up to them. And really bloody in their nose. Unfortunately, Putin has continued to push despite that. And because he mentions nuclear weapons, he, you know, everybody goes, look, nuclear weapons are horrific. But we need to remind Mr. Putin there's a lot more nuclear weapons that we could use against him than he could use against anybody in the West. And ours are better. They're more precise. They're more damaging because they're not just big, giant, drop it in the middle of the country and hope you destroy everybody. They hit the specific targets. There's, you know, we've shown that we can reach out and touch them with money, which is Putin's real main idea. You know, that's his thing. He's a greedy thief. And we should be standing up to him more stridently and strongly than we're doing. And the because we're not, Ukrainians are still dying.
Is there a point when you see us standing up and acting, even if it's only happening in Ukraine and hasn't touched a NATO country? Is there a point when, you know, we see something on television, an execution of a bunch of civilians, or you know, some big monumental thing that makes us actually act?
I hope so. You know, look, I don't want us to go to war. I don't want anybody to go to war. I've seen war. I know what it does. It's horrific. But as someone once said, there are things that are worse than war. And one of them is total slavery, subservience, destruction of societies and of peoples. And it's kind of what we're seeing the beginning of now with the leveling of the cities. How can we, in good conscience, allow that to happen? We allowed it to happen in Chechnya, and the world hardly said boo, because it was in the middle of Russia's territory. You know, we weren't getting daily internet TikTok videos of the stuff happening, and it happened. Well, we've used that excuse twice now, during the Holocaust and then there in Chechnya and a few other places, but we can't use that excuse in Ukraine. It's in the middle of Europe. Everybody's watching what's going on every day. We're seeing it live. You know, back during the Vietnam War, seeing war live for the first time kind of got a lot of Americans exercised that they really needed to do something. Well, this is the same thing on a larger scale, and I don't see how we as a country, how NATO as an alliance, how Western Europe as a cultural group, or the West as a cultural group, can stand by and let this happen.
Stephen Bucci from the Heritage Foundation is our guest. I totally understand the thought process behind, let's say Putin was acting rationally, and making that assumption maybe is a large leap, but if you know, you're the leader of Russia and you want to close up two entry points that you think are potentially hazardous for, let's say, an invasion, that would lead you to go take Ukraine back. And in particular, if you think that they should have been with you from the beginning on the onset, you know, shouldn't have got them taken away from you. I understand the thought process of a military person doing that, right? So I get that. What I don't get now is, I don't know how you're getting, what kind of responses you're getting, but when I throw something out there or tweet something or Facebook something, I'm shocked, Steve, by the amount of people who are in Putin's corner, like all the way, like think he's doing the right thing and should be allowed to do it without any impunity. I'm shocked by that. I don't know if you're getting the same response in some cases, and if so, what do you feel about that?
You know, I'm not getting a lot of that, definitely getting some of it. And some of it from people, you know, they're not just some sort of nut job or somebody who, you know, has an ethnic Russian background, so they jump in regardless.
Right.
I had a lady, I was on a show at a Green Bay, Wisconsin, and this lady who lives somewhere in the Midwest, and she started writing me on LinkedIn, and she was doing it based on the fact that her daughter now lives in Russia. They're not Russian ethnically, but her daughter lives in Russia, and, you know, she's getting all the Russian news and then writing back to her mom saying, no, no, all that's not true. This is what's really happening. So there are some people who are feeding on the Russian propaganda coming through their news sources, which is completely controlled by Putin.
Right.
The only two news sources out of Russia, I can't remember the names, but they were like semi-independent. They've been shut down. You know, I understand that. But some of the people that are in America, I hear two things, Lee. One was that when the Soviet Union fell, we took Ukraine away from Russia. No, we didn't. The president of the Russian Republic, the Ukrainian Republic, and the Belarusian Republic were the first three Soviet republics who declared themselves independent. The three of them got together and said, no, we are independent countries. The West had nothing to do with that. We weren't involved in it. It wasn't a negotiation. Boris Yeltsin said, no, Ukraine, you get to go. You're free. you know, and everybody agreed. And then the rest of the Soviet Union broke up after that. So the West didn't steal Ukraine from Russia. Nobody forced Russia to give up Ukraine. They never owned them. The second thing is that somehow I see this line that when the Soviet Union collapsed and Russia was trying to rebuild itself and all these, you know, bad guys started getting power, that somehow America was in cahoots with all these gangsters to rape Russia of its wealth. I lived through all that. There's no way in the world that's what happened. We were sending government people, you know, lawyers to help them build legal structures. We sent chaplains to help them develop, you know, how you use freedom of religion. They requested it. We sent it. Nobody forced it on them. Nobody demanded that they have to have this. Where are we getting this myth that somehow America was beating up on Russia when it was down, kicking it at its lowest point and raping it of its resources? That is a complete fiction, and I've seen it from some people that should know better. I don't understand that. If somebody out there has some documentation that shows how America, as a governmental policy, not as if some individual went over there and pulled a scam, I can't help that.
Right.
We got crooks in this country too. But I ask anybody to show me evidence that, other than the statement that it happened, that America went over there and was kicking Russia when it was down and you know, dumping on them. And so this is all really our fault. I think that's lunacy.
Two more quick ones, real quick, because I need quick answers because I got to go. But how can we just take yachts and bank accounts and seize that stuff? How does that work? Is that too complicated to explain in a 90-second spot?
It is kind of complicated. Yeah. That's a Treasury Department thing.
Okay.
I've never really been a part of that. But there are international laws that say when something is connected to an illegal act, you can go confiscate it, just like they do in the United States. If somebody is accused of selling drugs in America, you can go confiscate their car and their house and their cabin cruiser.
Right.
In this case, we're just going for $600 million cabin cruiser.
All right. Well, one more. So if Reagan were president, assuming that this was where it was right now, like take it up right now, not prior to this, but if Reagan's president now, what happens?
I think we would see a much stronger response. I think we would be using all of our means, heavy sanctions, you know, like complete sanctions of everything from Russia. You'd see us doing cyber warfare against them.
Right.
I mean, I have no evidence that Reagan would have done that, but yeah. I think he would use all the tools. And I think, like he did in Nicaragua and some other places, you'd be seeing our special operations people in there supporting the resistance against what's going on.
All right. Stephen Bucci, Heritage Foundation. Follow him on Twitter. Like I say every week, it's a great follow. Stephen, thank you, pal. I'll talk to you next time.
Okay, Lee. Take care, brother. You talk too. To you next week.
You too, bro. All right. There he is, the great Stephen Bucci. We'll come right back. We've got a special guest here, a couple guests in the studio. We're going to talk about a veterans benefit they've got going on. That's coming up after the top of the hour.
Man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a good